Welcome to Seagull Eagle, the podcast where two rivals meet, Crystal Palace and Brighton and Hove Albion. Two teams, one dream, to finish slightly above the other.
This week at Brighton, after a win over Newcastle, we're back in the top half of the table. Danny Welbeck may be 34, but he's ageing like a fine wine.
Wow. And at Palace, a six-goal thriller at Selhurst Park against Bournemouth ends in a draw. A leaky defence in the first half and a Mateta hat-trick. So much to talk about.
Plus, we'll go over all the latest club news and preview the upcoming fixtures. Newsflash, there's a lot of them.
Do you know why, Neil? Because this is Seagull Eagle!
Hello, Andy.
Yes, Neil. How are you?
I'm all right, mate. How are you doing?
I'm all right. Another week has passed.
Another week has flown past. That's what's happened.
Yeah, and we both had, quite exciting games at the weekend.
Oh, definitely. I mean, it's a relatively positive pod, I think, this week.
Yeah, I didn't think that at halftime.
No.
I'm not going to lie to you.
No, I was really looking forward to things. When I saw the halftime scores, I was like, oh, this will do me.
I was thinking of booking a holiday at halftime is what I was doing. But yeah, there we go. And of course, you know, the obligatory Nottingham Forest update as well. Even though this isn't a Nottingham Forest pod, the Palace fans... Well, do you know what? I don't know if the Palace fans are happy, actually, because I'm not. I was quite happy to let, you know, matey boy crack on.
I get what you're saying. There was an element of that in my mind. It's like, well, you know, is he gonna swallow his pride and get rid of him, or is he gonna keep going? And I was hoping he was gonna keep going, because that would have been even more fun.
That would have been brilliant.
It would have been.
Relegated by Christmas.
But you can see in the news today who's the top option to go in.
Mate, I've just come out of work. Tell me about it.
So, no. Talk about flip-flopping, right?
Yeah.
From one choice of style to another, right?
Yeah.
So we've gone from Nuno, very counter-attacking, quite defensive, to Ange, all-out attack that didn't work in any slight way.
Yeah.
And now where are we going?
Sean Dyche. Is it?
Sean Dyche looks like the absolute favourite to get the job.
I did hear rumours, because there was rumours that he'd been seen at the training ground last week.
Yeah, 2020's version of Big Sam. Like, it's just unbelievable.
Well, you know why? Because they're in a relegation scrap.
Well, exactly.
Wow. Do you know what is the funniest thing that I did read, though, before we move on to some actual Palace and Brighton stuff, which was that there was rumours circulating that Marinakis was going to be the interim manager until he found one. And I don't think it was even rubbish.
Oh,
I think
he
was genuinely considering taking control of the team. Could you imagine that dressing room? They'd be playing through fear.
Oh, that'd be scary, wouldn't it? Mind you, you bring Sean Dyche in. I'd like to see that fight. That'd be quite fun, wouldn't it?
Mate.
Dyche against Marinakis at the end when it all falls apart, that'd be a fantastic, especially on the pitch as well. Anyway, look,
be
let's not digress. Let's talk about the thriller at Selhurst Park first, I think.
Oh, yeah, okay.
I think we should, because
let's go straight in.
It was, I saw the highlights, and from what I've read online and everything, everyone just saying it was a hell of a game of football.
Well, do you know what? Funny enough, actually, before I go into it, Neil, it's quite a good place to start. And I don't know, I'm assuming that listening to this pod, there would be a good proportion of people that were at Selhurst Park and have seen it or watched the whole game.
Mm.
The highlights reel was considerably more exciting than the reality of the game.
Is that because you were a Palace fan and you were 2-0 down for a lot of it, though?
Yeah. So there's that. And then there's the fact that it was so stoppy start, so many VARs, many celebrations ruined. Truthfully, I walked out of that game and I was walking down the stairs from the main stand, kind of with the crowd on the way out. And I said to my son, I don't know if I enjoyed that. Isn't that a weird thing to say? And then obviously all of the headlines and the social media was like, you know, first, it's going to be first on match of the day, you know, game of the season, six goal thriller, all that. And I walked out and went, that was horrible. Like, madness, innit? And that's not kind of me being negative, but I felt it was a roller coaster, Neil. It was definitely a roller coaster. But I think I felt the pain. I felt the pain throughout all of that.
Yeah.
And also, I think levels of the excitement, I don't know, it was kind of, you know, when you're feeling the game and then there's other parts of it where you're like, why is this happening? What are we doing here? Like, and I think it was because our defence collapsed and we were doing stuff that I haven't seen us do for a year.
Yeah.
That's the bit of it. I think I was being, I was growing with frustration watching it unfold in front of me.
But I think Bournemouth can do that to you as well. I think you've got to look at it about who you were playing. I mean,
you're right.
They're a type of team that will look make you look silly because of the way that they play.
Well, here's a statement to start things off.
Go on.
Bournemouth are the best team that I have seen visit Selhurst Park, not this season, this year.
Really?
Truth, absolute truth.
Wow.
No other team have turned up to our gaff and given us a test like that.
Yeah, okay,
and
fair enough.
Not only on individual talent, like Semenyo and some of the others that were, I mean, Semenyo was schooling Chris Richards, and I haven't seen anyone do that for a year, but also the discipline and the constant way they came at us was intense. and we were also, I haven't seen another team go at Bournemouth the way that we went at Bournemouth when we turned it on.
Yeah,
but we're not used to that. Lineups wise, no changes from the team that started against Everton before the international break. The only difference is it was nice to see actually. Romain Essa was back on the bench.
Oh, okay.
So he got kind of put with the under 21s
in detention
a little bit.
Yeah.
And the funniest thing is he went straight to the under 21s, scored an absolute worldie on his first under 21 game. And got man of the match on the second one, and has been immediately promoted back up again. I feel like that's good because I don't want to see the kid not do well. And Nathaniel Klein's back again in the subs bench. Neither of them got any game time, but that's the only changes. So how did the game go? Well, as I said, I feel like I enjoyed the highlight reel better than the actual game.
Right,
that's the truth of the matter. But it was a 6-goal thriller, but not the type of 6-goal thriller you want to watch at home. You want to go ahead and then the other team come back and it's a bit more exciting that way around. It was opposite way around and it was a bit too nervy for me. But I think that Bournemouth initially started a little bit nervy from my perspective.
Okay.
Even though it was 6 minutes till the goal. But the first 5 minutes, I felt like it was a little bit like, oh, everyone was kind of assessing each other. Then they started. And when they started, they were playing like a team with confidence and a team where it was very clear where they were in the table, albeit 7-8 games in, I know,
sure,
but it was very clear why they were where they were, right? They frustratingly dominated the game early on, is the truth of the matter. Pressing high, dictating the play through the midfield. And from that, we couldn't play our normal game because they were pushing it up so high. It was a little bit of a battle of the tactics at the start.
Yeah, okay.
And it was, I'll be honest, I found it incredibly frustrating to watch.
Right.
That being said, though, I still didn't see us conceding, right? And even though I predicted a 2-2, I didn't believe that we'd let two in, let alone three.
Well, you've been so good defensively, haven't you? You've got a level of confidence now in that lot. So
you
can see that when you're playing now, that even you guys as fans, it's clear that you're such a good defensively solid team.
When we've got it switched on.
Yeah.
And obviously, I think this was the other thing. Going into this game, right, let's just go back in history. We had that unbeaten run, which I know you hate being reminded of, but it's part of the history now. And prior to that unbeaten run, we got spanked, what was it, 5-0 and 6-0, retrospectively.
Yeah, Newcastle and Man City.
Yeah, and then prior to that, we were on a little run again,
sure,
right? And it was like, never let a goal in. And all of a sudden, we shipped in the same amount of goals in two games that we did the whole flipping season. So you can see that at the start of this game, it was like, oh God, no, are we going back there? Is this where this is going? So it was an interesting one, full of nerves, I think, for the Palace fans. I didn't really see us conceding. Newfound confidence with the defence, how wrong was I? After just 6 minutes, that 19-year-old French forward, is it Kroupi? Is that how we pronounce him?
Yeah, yeah.
Proved why he's regarded as a hot prospect, right? It was
promising.
Actually his, I think it was his debut,
first start.
And then obviously there was that corner and Palace, probably the best way to describe it, uncharacteristically didn't win the first header, right? Which it just never happens. We didn't win the first header. Gay getting beaten by, guess who? Semenyo. and then obviously failed to mark this young French kid on the back post. And mate, I mean, he had a free run at it.
Yeah,
you look at the replay, you've got Mitchell, Munez and Richards and Gay stood round him, watching it go, no. And then there was just silence at Selhurst Park. There was silence after 6 minutes and everyone was like, what's this about? What do we do now? So a bit of a feeling of disbelief, not used to conceding. We also don't normally concede the first goal. There is a stat about that, which I didn't prepare, but it's very rare. I don't think we've gone behind yet this season.
No, I mean, that's part of your DNA, now against Glasner. It's like, you know, get ahead and then you're on the counter all the time.
This is where it was end-to-end stuff. And it was a battle of the counter-attack is the truth of the matter. Palace had a chance to equalise things. Mitchell did some really clever footwork. In fact, everyone in the stadium was laughing that it was that good. You know, when someone does something and you're like, you think you're Messi. It was one of them. So good old Mitchell did some brilliant footwork, but the Bournemouth keeper managed to beat the ball away. And then Pino, who... Here we go. He had a shocker. He had a shocker of a game.
I did know that he only lasted about an hour. So I did wonder whether that was an injury or that was just not playing very well.
Well, Neil, at what point did the game start turning?
Yeah, good point.
An hour. And I think that was probably a masterclass from Glasner to go, when your star player's not on their game, know when to take him off. And he didn't wait till 80 minutes, but he put in a good curling cross, really nice actually. And then obviously Mateta missed what would be now known as his first of many chances in this game, although he did score many. We'll talk about that later. So just wide. And this was kind of the beginning of the onslaught where the Palace fans were like, maybe this is going to be fine, it's all right, we've got loads of goals in us, we're creating all the chances, both teams kind of pushing for goals, both teams playing really stupidly high lines, right? Stupidly high lines, which means that both teams are vulnerable at the back, which is why our defence were being run through and things like that, because the midfield line were pushing so far up, so we weren't as condensed as we normally were.
Yeah, gotcha.
38 minutes in now, we're going to go to, and Semenyo runs at Richards on the break. And I mean, he had him in his pocket like this, and it was a bit of a problem. It beats him far too easily, crossed the ball into the box, and Gaye kind of kicks it to nowhere.
It's the first time I've seen, and this is, I suppose in some respects, this is a compliment. It's the first time I've seen Gaye make an actual mistake.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, he's usually so solid, but this one, he flung a foot at it, but didn't redo. He should have just literally booted it. He should have just kicked it out the way he was facing, but he tried to flick it, and unfortunately it falls to you-know-who.
It had a horrible bounce, and it's one of them, isn't it? But I think he cleared it, and unfortunately didn't quite know where it was going, and it just, it went straight to this kid again.
Yeah, creepy,
And got his second goal past Henderson. And you look at them two goals and you go, both defensive errors. I mean, crikey, what is happening? Like, that's just not us. Like, what team am I watching today?
Tiredness, Andy.
What? Nah, not after... No, what
it's
it is...
It's been a long season already, mate. It's such a small squad.
Not at all, mate. It's a tactical battle. And... we got caught out is the truth of the matter. Yeah. So then another chance for Mateta before half time. Gaye did try to redeem himself for his mistake and tried an overhead kick, which fell for Mateta and then ended up getting saved by Petrovic. One of many saves that he made in that game.
He did.
I want to say eight, I think, that he actually made during that game, which was phenomenal. So we get to half time, Bournemouth 2-0 up. And honestly, deserving the lead, I found myself, you know, I don't know if you do this when you go to Brighton, I found myself so annoyed about the situation and that I found myself complimenting Bournemouth. Sat there at half time going, Bournemouth are good though, aren't they?
Yeah.
Like, aren't they playing well? Defensively brilliant. Wow, aren't they good? So Bournemouth 2-0 up, dangerous in attack. Defence didn't show any signs of letting us in at that point. I couldn't see a single way of us scoring a goal, especially with Mateta, even though he's scoring goals, like it felt like he was missing more than he was scoring. I thought, you know, we could be here all day. It looked like a bad afternoon for Palace. And then there's also the fact that the Bournemouth fans are chanting, we're top of the league, which is just ridiculous. I mean, the whole thing was just very, very surreal. Bournemouth have come to Selhurst Park, Palace are 2-0 down, two defensive mistakes, and Bournemouth for top of the league. What world are we living in? Then in the second half, no changes were made at all. We came out the blocks though, revitalised. And I think in the post-match interview, Glasner said that the coaching team showed them some videos of what was happening.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden there was a few light bulbs that went off in the changing room, was like, get it.
That's great though, isn't it? That's great that you can do that this day and age with technology to get that message across quickly and succinctly.
Yeah, and they did. And I think, you know, the Palace fans clearly not wanting to let Bournemouth walk away with the points. And there seemed to be a bit more of a belief and a confidence with Palace after the break, i.e. 2-0 down, but they believed they had enough in the bank to get it through. Better pass completion immediately, because that was something that I was getting a bit frustrated with, especially Pino getting knocked off the ball, not getting where he needs to be, things like that.
Right.
A lot more forward passes and just a better flow of football than the first half, right? Because they were pressing. They were doing what we do to other teams, annoying them, pressing them, you know, getting in the pockets, all that kind of stuff. And it just... And they, I felt like they had the talent with Semenya and the pace, and they were using that their system better than ours.
Yeah.
It changed. Adam Wharton had the first chance, really, in that second half with a shot blocked. Then... Saar broke free. I don't know if you saw this one. Saar broke free and got taken down by Sensi.
Yes. So that was the big sort of, the really big VAR moment, wasn't it? Because it was one of those rarities that happens where a referee makes the decision of a yellow card.
Yeah.
Where a lot of people might have thought it was a red. And the VAR then says, let's have a look at this. And they suggest that the referee has an opportunity to make a second look at things.
Yeah. Which would imply that the VAR guys thought it was a red.
It always implies that the referee, that they think the referee may want to make a change of their decision. And let's be honest, mate, 95% of the time the referee follows with what the VAR has said and changes their decision.
Oh, we were all very happy with VAR.
I'm sure you would have been.
Thinking,
I would have been.
Yeah, let's get him off. But I think, look, it's one of them, isn't it? It's like, is he running towards goal? Is he not running towards goal? Let's be honest, though. If he hadn't been, if he hadn't been taken down, he got taken down and then stumbled about five steps because he lost his back foot. How do you know which direction he's travelling in the first place? I'm not saying he got it wrong.
No.
I'm saying the science isn't exact on that.
No,
is it?
And I think that's the point. I think there's enough doubt in it.
Yeah.
And I think the one thing that a lot of referees and a lot of people look at when they're trying to make that decision is there a defender somewhere close? Is there a defender that could get in the way or whatever? And I think when you look at the pictures, I tend to agree that a yellow was probably the right answer. But I was surprised when the ref didn't go with the red because simply he'd been asked to the VAR to look at it. So.
Yeah, it would have been very interesting to see how the game had played out if it was a red.
Oh, yeah,
but there
definitely was
a covering defender, but what they failed to realise is it was Saar, and he wears a cape for a living. So, you know, Super Saar would have absolutely schooled that defender. Anyway, end-to-end play continued.
Yeah.
Semenyo shot powerful strike over the bar. Everyone was like, oh my God, don't make it free, for the love of God. This is going to be awful. Then came the changing moment. As I said, Pino was swapped out for Nketiah. And what I loved about this was that it wasn't Mateta for Nketiah. It was Pino for Nketiah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right? So he was playing Nketiah behind Mateta, which... changed everything.
You said he did that in the Conference League game, didn't you, recently? Yeah, which is an interesting role for Nketiah.
But he's more than capable of playing there.
Yeah.
And he's still scoring goals from there. Bearing in mind, he did find the back of the net in this game, but it didn't count.
Yeah.
But I think what he introduced was the pace and intensity behind the forward line. What we had at that point was Mateta getting balls in, and he was then just getting absolutely overwhelmed and struggling to get to the extra bit, whereas Nketiah was making the runs and also just a bit of vision, which was lovely. Pino was trying to do it beautifully. Bournemouth weren't having none of it. Do you get what I mean? There's a game for Pino and there's a game for Eddie.
Yeah, that's fair.
And this was Eddie's game, really. I think the biggest thing that he did was that he added a level of panic to Bournemouth having the ball in defence, which was lovely. Fresh legs on. Nketiah's quick, right?
Well, also,
and he was at their feet before then.
I was going to say, and also the other side of it, he's a different type of player to Pino. He's a striker. He wants actually to go ahead. He wants to go past the defenders.
He does.
He doesn't want to come short for the ball. He wants to go and try and score goals. So it changes the mindset and it probably gives you a bit of a momentum.
Yeah, which it did. And then, of course, you add that to the energy of Muniz down the right side and kind of the newly found in the second half control of Lacroix at the back. He did step up, and to be fair, he didn't make any mistakes. Gay did, Richards did,
right.
Lacroix was on one, and also was making some really good passes forward. So I think he was contributing well. And then Mateta, at that point, began to found them spaces that were just not there in the first half.
Okay.
Right? It opened up, which is weird because we were 2-0 down. And then at the hour mark, beautiful ball from Lacroix found Mateta and goal.
Yep.
Then disallowed for offside. Then we waited for VAR. Then VAR overturned the decision and the goal stood. What we missed was the corner flag being kicked because it was immediately ruled out. And it turned out it was a close one. But again, that was another 3 or 4 minutes wasted in the game. And this is what I mean about the live experience of this thriller was somewhat less kind of, like it was a little bit frustrating.
It's a shame. But actually, in the end of the day, that's where VAR worked in your favour. Because the linesman thought it was offside. So with no VAR, you wouldn't have scored that goal. So
yeah.
You know, it's give and take, isn't it, really?
Yeah, absolutely. So therefore, at that point, Selhurst parked up the energy. After another great run from Muniz, Mateta was there again for his second, right? And it was just a slide in at the back post. Very similar, funny enough, actually, just the opposite way around to what he did for France midweek in his debut scored. Okay. And that's funny in itself, Neil, because everyone was like, yeah, you got a call up for France, mate. You're never going to get a game.
No.
Plays him on his first game and scores. There you go, fingers up. All square 2-2. Fans got the feeling it weren't over yet. And everyone around me was saying this. They were like, this game ain't done. Obviously, then at that point, Saar had another really strong shout for a penalty turned down. Mm. And Keita getting the ball in the net in the 78th minute, having it denied by the offside flag. And Keita offside? Never. And then in the 89th minute, a good move from Bournemouth on the left-hand side, which was actually, I hate to say this, it was a really good move. They carved us up completely, took the lead again. Substitute Christie scored from close range, but opened us up. And it was embarrassing. They actually went around the back of us.
I was looking at that and trying to work out where that went wrong. And it sounds something simple, but at that moment, because it's late in the game, you've got so many tired legs, but Christie just runs past Kamada and Richards and no one tracks him. And it's like, it's tired brains and tired legs, you know, and he's run into that lovely little spot, the perfect spot, really, just to find the ball. It was a good finish as well, to be fair. And I honestly, around me, when I was at the Amex, everyone was telling me what was going on with the scores and stuff. And I was absolutely gutted when you got it back to 2-2.
Yeah.
But then there was like this little subtle, you know, like cheer when you hear other results. Or something. Someone's going, oh, Bournemouth have done it. They've scored. I was like, oh, how many minutes to go? And then someone was saying, oh, it's literally like a couple of minutes left. I was like, brilliant.
Yeah. Little did you know.
Little did I
know. And then, but what we did know, though, and Selhurst Park knew this, even when they went ahead, we all knew that there was going to be at least 7, 8, 9, 10 minutes worth of extra time because we'd all sat there and endured it, right?
Yeah,
so we knew that we still had a reasonable amount of time to get this back. Plus, we'd seen the amount of chances that was being created, right? Mm. We'd seen where we were at and how many close misses. So we knew that all we needed to do was get that ball in the box. I know it's easy to say this in hindsight, but there was a belief that we could at least walk away with this in a point, even after that third goal went in.
Because
that third goal from them was almost against the run of play at that point,
right? Yeah.
We were clearly the better team in the second half. First half, no doubt about it, we were awful. A late Palace corner put in the box, Gaye was wrestled to the floor. And he was. And it was ridiculous from Bournemouth. I don't even know why they did that. But he took him out and then he took him out again halfway down.
It's, do you know what? Right, I was looking at this and I think what I would say is, yes, I agree. I can understand why the penalty was given. I think the only complaint I would have if I was a Bournemouth fan would be that happens all the time. Now, that's not an excuse. It's fair enough. Like I think the refs should start giving these penalties to this type of grappling in the box because I think I'm tired of it. I just want people to try and actually score goals and defend properly, not try and hug everyone and turn it into a rugby match. So I understand why Bournemouth would be unhappy with this decision, but as a football neutral, I'm also looking at it going, I think that's better for the game, that teams start to realise that they can actually concede penalties doing that, because it's so annoying to watch when you watch them.
Oh, mate, it's really annoying. And again, though, this is the bit where the the highlights reel as the advantage, Neil, because what you didn't see before that was the 2 or 3 minutes that it took to take every set piece, where the ref was going, stop pushing, stop cuddling, stop doing
it. What is that about?
Because Bournemouth were just doing it left, right and centre. And like, and then the other, like, you know, cuddling Mateta.
Yeah.
It was all, and that's why Bournemouth have been doing well, right? Because that's the dark arts.
Yeah, but yeah, absolutely.
I think the point being was that whether it was this one or not, my memory don't serve me greatly here. I do believe that this point when Gueye got taken down, the ref had already told them 2 or 3 times to have blown his whistle.
Yes, he told the whoever it was that was grappling Gueye, he literally told him just before that. And then he continued to do it. Yeah. So, like, yeah, I've got
And to be honest, Gueye didn't even overdo it. Because when you look at the slow action replay, he got rugby tackled down. And then halfway down, he put another arm around him. So you're like, hang on a minute. Yeah. There's no getting out of this.
No, I agree. I think you're absolutely right. It pains me, especially for the timing of the goal and the penalty. Sorry,
no, I know.
But you're right. I think it's good for the game that refs start pulling this up.
Mate, and also I think for the, you know, there's that kind of unwritten, which way have decisions gone? How many times did that Lino in the first half not put his flag up when he should have? Because there was plenty of them, by the way. And you kind of feel like the decision gods got that one right for us.
Yeah.
But then, of course, Mateta scores.
Yes.
He gets his hat trick, right? Which is just wonderful.
Mm.
And then in the 99th minute, he found himself unmarked and meters away from the goal, right? Did you see this?
Yeah.
Oh my God. And this is my point with this game, right? I'm stressed out now. There's no better way to describe this. I'm not enjoying the game, and I should be. For some unknown reason, I've taken the stress angle of this as opposed to the enjoyment angle. And then you find Mateta 99 minutes getting the match winning thing, and it bobbles and he shins it, right?
Yeah.
And you're like,
thank God.
What is happening here?
That's what you like.
There we go. And do you know what? This is the funny thing, right? Everyone's like, oh my God, oh, how can you miss that? My nan can score that. You know, you get all that. And then everyone's like, hang on a minute, he did score 3.
Perspective.
This is the point. But that's the reason though, because it was so bad. And then you saw his post-match interview.
Yeah.
And mate, he's just got the match ball. He's basically got us a point out of the game. He scored 3 goals and he's nearly got a tear in his eye because he knows how much of an idiot he looks, right?
Oh, it was so bad.
There you go. Anyway, absolute disbelief is the truth of the matter. Even Glasner just fell to his knees at that point and was like, get me home, I've had enough of this. Would have been the perfect ending. But truthfully, I do think 3-3, watching it without looking at the stats, watching it was probably the right result, right? Is the truth. But then I looked at the stats and then I realised we had 20 shots to their 8.
Yeah.
We had 4.25 XG. Neil, 4.25 XG to their 2.03. We had 7 shots on target to their 5. Them stats tell me we absolutely should have won it, right? Mm. Bournemouth were genuinely superb. They were, right? And they were ruthless, they were organised, and I don't begrudge them that point. But I also feel like the way we played in the second half, we were deserving of getting the draw. I mean, from a Palace perspective, just genuinely an absurd game. But what about this stat with Mateta's XG?
Yeah, I heard about this.
Phenomenal.
It's unbelievable. So he registered the highest XG in a single game for a single player in Premier League history. So since they've been recording
XG... over 10 years, isn't it? They've been recording XG.
Since they've been recording XG, that performance on Saturday is the highest XG for a player, full stop.
3.67.
Unbelievable.
He got on his own and he scored a hat-trick. And there's also a supporting stat to this, Neil, which is even worse for him.
Yeah.
Right. The first player in history to score a hat-trick and underperform on the metric.
Wow.
It takes a little while to register that, doesn't it?
That's
so he scored a hat trick and he's underperformed on XG.
And this
goes back, without going into whole things, I know we've taken a while on this, but it was a hell of a game to try and explain. But I think this goes back to my point for those who listened last week about Mateta. And again, I wasn't digging him out last week, right? Because he has been missing a lot of chances. He's missed the most amount of chances for his position in the league.
Yeah.
But the stats are skewed. The stats are skewed because he is being given more opportunities to score than your average striker. Right, Neil, that's enough about Palace. Brighton, you actually had a good day out, didn't you?
Yeah, I think I did. I say that with a slight question mark because I think I was going to the game. Well, you know, I mean, we've talked about it the last
You said to me when we were doing the predictions, you said to me, I can't remember the exact words, but it was somewhere along the lines of, I'm not optimistic about this one.
No.
And I think you thought that they were going to, I think you actually said, I think they're going to have too much for us.
Yes,
I think you said
physically, I really thought they were going to be too much for us. I think,
and I hoped you were right.
Yeah, look, we know I've talked about it to no end over the last few weeks. There's a lot of uncertainty, I think, with play styles, with issues with cohesiveness. We also then had the added concerns of a few injuries going into this game, because we'd had Mitoma that had been out. He was still out. Gruda now injured on international duty, and Gomez was a doubt too before the game. So we were starting to look a little thinner on the ground. If you think Veltman's already injured, obviously Webster, Hinshaw Wood. So we're just starting to look a little bit creaking around the edges, and you sort of think, okay, I hope nothing else happens. So the lineups come out, and actually, there was only one change from that Wolves game before the international break.
That's unlike you.
Well, there you go. So Gruda, being injured, was replaced by Jorginho Rutta. So one change.
Okay.
Dare I say a little bit of continuity, Andy? Wiefer right back, Van Hek, Dunk, Ferdy at left back still, keeping his place, even though De Kuyper was on the bench. We had Belaba back and Ayari in the midfield, with Minte this time back on his right side.
Okay.
Jorginho Rutta in the 10, and Gomez now seemingly sort of fitting on that left-hand side of the wing where Mitoma normally would be, just trying to make different types of runs, different player, but still filling in that gap. Danny Welbeck back up top. And continuity, I'm here for. I'm here for, as I said last week in my swooping statement, we need to see a team start to understand and be a bit more cohesive together, because otherwise we're going to keep getting repeating those problems of passes going astray, players not quite knowing where they should be. So I was really pleased with the lineup generally. The bench looked a little light because of our injuries, but we did have both Greek lads on there and Tommy Watson. But, you know, it was okay. I was relatively comfortable with what I was looking at. I think my concern was, as I said to you and you've just said now, is that Newcastle generally are such a physically strong team, big, strong, fast. I just thought they'd be too much for us.
You've got a decent record against them at home, though.
We've got a really decent record against them. And actually, I've got the stat here. So now, because of that result, Brighton have only lost 5 out of 23 previous meetings against Newcastle.
That is mad.
Isn't it? Yeah. Newcastle hate us. First half starts. It's a bright game. It's quite open, but Albion, I would say, definitely have the better of the first few chances. And there's some really good passing movements, a little bit better cohesion. We actually started to look a little bit more connected. Now, I'm not going to go over top here. I'm not going to start getting too excited. But there was definitely signs of improvement compared to our last few games. It's only one game, but there are signs. Now, the first sort of 25 minutes or so, relatively open play, no really huge open chances as such. It was just end-to-end, a lot of midfield play, battling for the ball from both teams, trying to get there. Newcastle had the odd half chance, but nothing major. Now, the first real sort of event happened around 28 minutes where Diego Gomez, who's on that left wing, actually goes down and can't continue because he bashes his hip or something. We can't quite work out what it is. Oh. So he goes off, comes back on, tries to run it off, and within about 30 seconds to a minute, he's back down on the floor again. So I don't know what's up with him. I'm thinking it looks like the hip of some sort. He wasn't happy, so he's had to go off.
It's a weird one, isn't it?
It is a weird one. I just think he literally just couldn't move as much as he wanted to. So that forces us into a change. But if anything, I think this change worked out for the better.
Okay.
So De Kuyper comes back on, natural left back, and he pushes Ferdi Kadioglu back up onto the left wing. So now on that left-hand side for Brighton, you've got De Kuyper, naturally left-sided defender, but really good attacking. And you've got Ferdi Kadioglu, who literally could play anywhere, who's used to playing on a left-hand side. Very good attacking, very good defender. So you hit that balance between the two. They could literally be interchangeable, and they worked really well together. And that was a really bright spot, I think, for Brighton. So the game continues, and it's actually quite a bright game end to end, but no real crystal clear chances, or at least that is, until just before half time. I think it was 40, 41 minutes. I think everyone's probably seen it by now, but Jorginho finally finds a little pocket in between the defenders and the midfield. He comes short, the ball gets passed into him finally. He gives it a turn this time, rather than what we started to do in the first sort of 30 minutes was every time we had the ball in that area, we looked to pass it back into midfield. But this time, Jorginho Rutter, he took the ball, pivoted straight away, started running towards the defenders, found that little pass in between the two centre-backs, straight through to Welbeck, who was on the shoulder of Bosman. And, I mean, he just literally ran straight through. Pope went down and he dinked it. Just a beautiful little finish, a real striker's finish into the goal. 1-0 up, and, you know, I'm happy. And this goes back to what I was saying last week, Andy. Yes, it's great that we were 1-0 up, but I was more happy about the way that we were playing. We just seemed to be able to pass the ball to a actual player in a blue shirt, and we could work hard as a team, and we just seemed more connected as a whole sort of first 11, whether that be from defence to midfield to attack. We seemed to be working better for each other. So it was a really positive first half, 1-0 up. Not much else happened after that, actually. So it got to half time, and I think just about deserved a 1-0 lead. So, I was happy, and I think, like, you're sitting there at half time going, oh, fantastic, Bournemouth were actually pretty good. It's a bit depressing watching that. I'm sitting there at half time thinking, this can't continue. Brighton are going to muck it up. Because the realistic,
really, that's the way your brain is plugged, that, well, it's going to end in disaster.
Because we're so inconsistent, Andy, you just don't know what's going to happen. Thankfully, what I would say is, well, first of all, no changes at half time, right? Okay. So we come back out and we have a really good first 20 minutes. We start to impose ourselves on the game and we push Newcastle right back. And the first, as I say, 20 minutes, we create a fair few chances, two in particular, which we really should have scored a goal. So Ayari has a chance from us closing down players. He has a chance in the penalty box, which he sort of tried to curl into the top corner. He should have done better. Yeah. And then De Kuyper has an opportunity as well, coming in late into the box for a shot. Again, Pope makes a good save. But again, it's like you start to see those situations happen and us not get a second goal. And you sort of feel, well, look, at some point, Newcastle are going to wake up. You know, they're going to start to really want to push because time's going to run out for them. And lo and behold, that's the type of thing that happens. So they make a change around the hour mark and they start pushing more and more players forward. And I think that's when they really start to take a stranglehold, that sort of next 15 minutes of the game, as it were. And it was at that point that I think it's also worth noting the substitutions that Brighton made. So on 71 minutes, Jorginho Rutter and Carlos Baleba both came off. And Simas and Milner comes on. So we're 1-0 up and we're sort of playing like a 4-4-2 in midfield. Milner's in there. And he's okay. You know, we know what he is. He's great at certain things. But I think we lost quite a bit of momentum at that moment for at least the next 10 to 15 minutes because we lost Carlos Baleba, who I would say had his best game of the season so far. And I'll talk about him a little bit more later.
I thought it was a crazy decision to bring him off.
So Newcastle put the pressure on, right? And they go for it. They've got nothing to lose. Obviously, they put more and more attackers on the pitch and they try and sort of break us down. And they start to take over the control of the game for that sort of next 15 minutes, as I said. It gets to 76 minutes. And to be fair, fantastic goal. I don't know if you saw it.
I did, and I celebrated it.
I'm sure you did.
Yeah.
Voltimada, wonderful little finish. And, I think it's probably deserved overall. I think Newcastle did enough to not lose that game. I think if you look at the overall stats, that would probably back that up. It got to 1-1. And that's the moment, I think, where every week we watch Brighton, we think we know what's going to happen when we concede a goal. I've talked about it a lot. What is the mentality at that point? What happens with the players on the pitch? A lot of the time what you find is the goal goes in and there's a level of panic or desperation and players start losing their heads, not in an anger way, but in a understanding the tactics of the game and what they need to do. I felt this time that didn't happen as much. right? So that was 76 minutes that goal went in. And Newcastle were obviously up. They were wanting to go for more. And rather than us getting a bit desperate, what we decided to do for the first sort of couple of minutes you saw us, we just calmed it down and we tried to keep hold of the ball for a minute. And that was the right decision to do, obviously, but it just took us a couple of minutes to get ourselves back into it. And because then Newcastle were still trying to attack and they wanted to go for the winner, they thought they were going to get that. Because to be fair, if you'd seen Brighton the whole season, you would think the same thing. Brighton are going to collapse
here. Of course.
And we're going to go and score if you're a Newcastle fan. And thankfully, Brighton sat back for a couple of minutes, but then it got to about 80 minutes and you could see the team physically go, right, we're comfortable now. We got back into this.
Yeah.
Let's calm down. Let's start playing our football again, you know?
Yeah.
And they started to spread out and they started to push more and push more. And I think the goal is a really good example of us taking risks in the right way. And what I mean by that is we'd pressed hard. We hadn't been successful. The ball had come back out, but we were still relatively camped in their half.
Mm.
And then what happened was, Weaver from right back decided to make a really hard darting run in from right back straight through the heart of Newcastle. And very rarely do the Brighton midfielders pick up that pass and actually pass the ball. They don't really pick up that run and actually pass the ball to them. They usually use that as a decoy to then pass it out wide.
Yep.
But this time Ayari decided, no, I'm going to be positive. And he passed it straight into Weaver. Weaver got to the edge of the box just as the ball got there. A tackle came in, which I'm sure you all saw. But because Weaver made that happen, the ball comes back out literally a couple of yards. And who's there? Danny Welbeck on the edge of the box. Fantastic first time finish. I mean, when you see it from behind the goal and you see him take the shot, there isn't many places he can put it because of the defenders in the way and the goalkeeper where it's going to go in the back of the net. But thankfully, he found the right place to put it. And obviously, the rest of us lose our shit and we go up and, you know, there's everything everywhere being thrown around because we're 85 minutes against Newcastle and we've scored and we're 2-1 up.
And it was a good goal. It was a really good goal, Neil. And I think, you know, the first one was a typical striker's goal, as you said. And the second one wasn't as easy as he made it look, is the truth of the matter. And it pains me to say it, mate, but yeah. Welbeck, he's still got it, hasn't he? And what is it? He's scored 4 goals in his last 3 games.
Well, yeah, but I mean, it depends how you look at that. I mean, so he scored 2 against Chelsea, 2 this weekend.
Yeah.
He did nothing against Wolves apart from give them a goal.
Mm.
And this game against Newcastle, I'm going to be controversial, he didn't do much else apart from score 2 goals, which sounds ridiculous.
Well, yeah, but I mean, that's his job, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was talking about in my bit.
I know you were,
which
that's
is
why
about
I've said it.
You got the 2 types of strikers, haven't you? You've got the ones that contribute to the game and hopefully get it in the back of the net, or you got the ones that you're employing to get them in the goal.
To be fair to Welbeck, I'm being a little unfair. What I mean is he didn't do much attacking-wise. He defended, he worked hard for the team, he closed down. But his opportunities for goals in that game or opportunities to do something were very limited. But the opportunities that he had, he put away. And that's all you can ask for, really, of a striker.
Here's a question for you.
Yeah, go on.
Is it too late for Danny Welbeck in England?
That's a really good question.
Thanks, Neil.
No, it is. I think it all comes down to the next sort of 15 games or so. I think if he continues the way he's playing, England have a hole with strikers.
Yeah.
Thomas Tuchel likes mature, experienced players. You never know, mate. I mean, realistically, a 23-man squad, you usually pick 3 out-and-out strikers.
Yeah, yeah.
Ollie Watkins and we obviously know who else are the top 2 strikers in this country that seem to be picked all the time. That third spot...
I do believe it's open for... I'm not saying that I agree with what... You know, I think that he should, but also there's kind of evidence saying that he potentially should be considered. Also, if it's not now, it's never.
No, absolutely.
Because he ain't going to make it to the next one. I mean,
no.
He's not...
He has been to World Cups. It's okay.
Like, oh, no, I know. But what I'm trying to say is that he's going to be too old for the next one.
Yeah, no, I agree.
So I think that's the point. But he's not in the plans at the moment. And is he making a case or is he just kind of... Is that done?
No,
that's kind of the question.
I think you're right. I think it's too early this season to say definitely one way or the other. But what I would say is if you look at the last 12 months of Danny Welbeck, it's clearly the best part of his whole career. So he's in the best form of his whole career. So if it's ever going to be a time, you're quite right, mate.
Good
shout.
Let's see.
Andy wants Welbeck for England. Thank you.
Don't want him to play for England. Yeah, I'm happy for him to get on the plane.
I know you love him. It's okay. Bottom line is, right, we go 2-1 up. Herzler then makes a couple of more changes. He brings on Kostoulas, the young 18-year-old, finally for his debut. Takes off Welbeck, basically some legs up front while we try and defend. He puts Coppola on to make it a 5-man defence.
Yeah.
And Newcastle really go at us for the next, obviously, 8-9 minutes that are left, trying to break us down. We stand tall. Look, I'm not going to lie. Newcastle had some really good chances. There was a couple of handball suggestions. There were a couple of flaps from Verbruggen. There were some really last-ditch tackles going in and all sorts of...
You have shaded over them handball decisions. Oh, but I mean, yeah, you've got to take the rough with the smooth.
Yeah, look, the reason I didn't talk about it that much is because I think I felt it was the right decision. You can't be what was probably about a foot and a half away from a ball on the goal line and it not being near your hand when someone's trying to kick it out. I just think, I think the handball rule is a joke anyway, but I think it was the right decision. I think it would have been really harsh to give a handball for that. Having said that,
seen them given before.
If you're in Europe, that might have been given.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's the what it is. But overall, I would say a draw may have been a better result on fairness. I think we probably had the better of it when it comes to the actual clear-cut chances by the end of it as well. I think the performance was better, and I think that's the first thing I would say, right? So we had much more connection between the players and the thirds of the pitch, as I said earlier. It just felt like we were moving as a whole team rather than an attack or a defence. The midfield seemed more joined up, and that really showed, I think, because Belaba easily had his best game of the season.
I agree.
So not last season levels yet, I would say. You know, it's only one game, but so far so good in the sense that he was much better than anything else we've seen so far from him this season.
Well, he's turning it back on now. He's realised that he weren't doing great, and he's realised that he's got to get himself back in that shop window for January, right?
Well, either way, whatever it is, hopefully that'll work. I don't care one way or the other, because he needs to get his head in the game. And I think Herzler's style, even though it's difficult to work out sometimes, what it does rely on heavily, no matter which way you look at it, is certain particular players, certain particular roles within that team working really well and being in form. And they are the fullbacks and that central defensive midfielder, the one that holds, that anchors everything together, that can put out fires when the transition is happening. And if those three roles aren't happening very well or they're out of form, well, we start inconsistently like we did this season. So far, so good in that sense that I think hopefully that's turned a corner for Belaba, but the jury's out still. It's only one game. We'll wait and see. The other point that I wanted to make was, well, I sort of made it earlier, but I think I just probably want to pinpoint it. Having Ferdy as a left winger, it just looks so much better in terms of ability to transition between attack and defence. Because both wings then were really happy to do both. We've got Minté, who's very good coming back and a strong defensive mindset. Obviously, Wiefer's very good as well. And then you've got now De Kuyper and Ferdy. So you've got those four players on the outsides that are interchangeable and can really work hard, both attacking and defence. And they've both, all four of them have got good engines in them, you know? So that really showed. And I think that was a nice balance between the two. A little point to Minté, who I think is still performing at a really good level. I just think this game on Saturday, he was trying too hard. And I think that's something that's in his locker at the moment. I think you can see the exuberance of youth in him a little bit and inexperience. And my one suggestion for him would be that he has to use Wiefer more than he's currently doing. He's getting the ball and the defenders start to know what you're up to all the time, because if you don't change it up from time to time and actually use the overlapping fullback, it's very easy for the midfield to work out and the defenders to work out what you're doing. So look, those are the little notes that I've got here. And the only other little point I was going to make was there's this funny little observation near the end of the game. So obviously, it gets to about 83 minutes. Fabian Herzler's going to make a last couple of changes. And he's got Kostoulas ready, but he's also got Tommy Watson ready. Both of them would come on for their Premier League debuts. The score's 1-1, and obviously, it's very finely balanced. And then they're on the sideline just about to come on. Welbeck scores. Now, because Welbeck scores, obviously we go 2-1 up. And so suddenly maybe the mindset has to change. And I felt really sorry for Tommy Watson because one of the coaches clearly just turned to him as everyone else is jumping up and down and goes, sorry, lad, not today. So he has to sit back down, trudge, put his tracksuit back on. I just felt a bit sorry for the lad. Yeah. You know, he's going to get his debut. He's going to come out to the crowd and we score. Everyone's cheering. And I'm sure he was happy. But at the same time, he's sitting there going, oh.
He'll get his moment. He'll get his moment.
So look, finish up. Tight game, 45% possession. That's all at home, which was interesting for us. Normally we're the kings of possession at home. 5 shots to 3 on target. And ironically, we are now unbeaten in our last 5 games, which doesn't feel like that.
Well, that's home and away.
Yeah, yeah. Last 5 games in all competitions. We've 1-3, drawn 2. We're up to 10th. And we're only 2 points away from really what our aim probably is, which is Europa League, which is probably about 5th or 6th. So
yeah, you've somehow kind of Houdini'd it up the league there very quickly. This is what we were saying, though. It don't take much at this time of year.
Exactly.
I've got a question for you.
Yeah, go on, mate.
You've now defeated Newcastle, Chelsea, Man City this season.
Yeah.
And you got a point off of Spurs.
Yeah.
You were happy with the way that they played.
Yes, I was this weekend, yeah.
You sat in 10th. I think you were 9th after the game. You're now sat in 10th after it's all kind of played out. You're not far off where you want to be. Not far behind us now.
Yep.
Like, you know, one game, one or loss between us and we're, you know, we're swapping over. Do you not owe him an apology now?
Who?
Hersler.
No, not at all. It's one game. Andy.
I feel like Brighton... top half the table, beating Newcastle, Chelsea, Man City.
Stop it. Because you know exactly.
I think you're being harsh.
You've got a little smirk on your face because you know this isn't about league position and it's not about points and it's not about results.
Harsh.
So I'm not going to go over it again. Anybody wants to hear my rant again, go back to last episode and listening to the swooshing statement.
You should be grateful for where you are because
I am grateful for where we are.
Newcastle, Chelsea, Man City.
I am grateful for where we are.
Mate, many a Brighton fan would be dreaming of them heights.
I am very grateful for where we are. I love it. But I don't love the way we've been playing. Saturday was a lot better and I want it to continue with that style of performance and I hope we can. Next stop, Old Trafford.
I prefer not to speak. If I speak, I will be in trouble.
Welcome back, everyone. This
welcome.
Is Seal Eagle. I hope they... had some great adverts for you.
I think I when I listened to our own podcast, how weird is that? I think I there was one about IKEA meatballs.
Oh, was there?
Mm.
Blimey.
Do you reckon they'll pay us more now? I've mentioned it again.
IKEA meatballs? Oh,
yeah.
Twice.
Ooh.
We're in the money. All the meatballs. Listen, before we move on, I know there's a few things we want to talk about club news-wise, but I wanted to plug something just very quickly, if that's all right, Andy.
Oh.
So... Wednesday the 22nd of October, which is hopefully the week that you're listening, there is a pub quiz going on for Brighton fans aid of the Brighton and Hove Albion Foundation. So it's for a really good cause. It's going to be raising money for them. And as you know, that's a charity function of the Brighton Hove Albion. So it's going to be a fun night at the Caxton Arms on, as I said, Wednesday the 22nd of October at 7:30. And the pub quiz... will actually be, there'll be teams of different podcasts of Brighton. So I think there's going to be Talk Seagulls, the Seagulls, you've got Seagull Social, and you've got Seagull Eagle Team as well.
Technically, the Seagull team.
Yeah, you did chicken out, didn't you?
Well, I chickened out, but then I've got work commitments, so I'm actually away.
Whatever.
But I did. I'm not going to lie to you. When you asked me about this, my initial thought was that sounds great. That's a great idea. Love it. And then I realised that I'd be the only Palace supporter in a room of about 100 Brighton fans.
We're not that bad. We would have given you stick for 10 minutes, and then we would have got on with it.
All I know is if it was the other way around, I would have absolutely gone in hard.
Well, and that's the difference.
So it is
between you
and
I.
I think there was an element of chicken out, but also I've got a legitimate excuse now. But I do. No, it's a brilliant cause that this
is
being done
for. Yeah, I agree.
Credit to the organisers, great. And I wish the one half of the Seagull Eagle team all the best.
Thank you very much.
Smash them, Neil.
I hope we beat all the other teams. Yes, I'm looking forward to it.
Price. What's the prize?
I think we're just raising money for the foundation, mate. That's the point, isn't it? All the prize money goes to them. There's no money for us.
But no,
that's what charity means.
You've got to take out the other podcast, right?
Oh, well, definitely.
Surely the prizes, they've got to come off air. Oh.
ooh, that's interesting.
Do you know what I mean?
I might say that to them. Yeah, yeah.
Do you know what? It should be, if you lose, if you don't win, you've got to plug all their podcasts and they've got to plug ours.
Love that.
If we win.
I love that. I'll talk to them. I'll see what they're...
I think
there's also...
loads more Brighton fans on this. I don't really want that. I think
there's also a ex-Brighton players team as well. So that'll be fun. So anyone wants to come along...
Is there?
Yeah, say hello to some ex-Brighton players and also to all the podcast guys. Please do come along. As I said, Wednesday, 22nd of October at the Caxton Arms in Brighton, just next to Brighton Station. Almost.
You're going to get all starstruck, aren't you? You're going to be like, oh, there's that bloke from 1927.
No, they all get starstruck because of me.
Is it? Wow.
Club news. Crystal Palace. I know there's a few things you wanted to talk about, so hit me. What is that?
I'll save the hitting for later. but yeah, look, Glasner, there's been some talks recently, mostly fueled by the fact that Steve Parrish came out and did a couple of interviews, actually, in the last week or so, which has been quite interesting, giving us a bit of an insight as to what's going on at the club. Parrish was asked quite openly about what the situation with Glasner was. And then Glasner was asked, after Parrish's interview, in the pre-Bournemouth press conference, about whether Glasner was going to get a new contract. Because I don't know if you remember, there was all this stuff in the media about a month ago, maybe 2 months ago, saying that Glasner had rejected a new contract.
I remember it, yeah. And I put it in there. Sorry.
But it was funny because Glasner was never offered a new contract at that point, and the talks hadn't even happened. So
what's the ultimate quote from Steve Parrish? What did he say?
Well, he's described the talks as positive and forward-looking. And Glasner...
Positive and forward-looking.
Yeah, and Glasner has put out... I haven't got the exact quote here, but he said it in the press conference. Everyone can listen to it.
Yeah.
He's basically saying that, look, if the talks go well, and this isn't about what's in it for him, this isn't about his career, this is about what he can bring to the club, and if he feels like he can continue to do it, in essence. And he hasn't said it in them words, but that's what he's implying. And he's basically saying, look, if we can all agree the same thing, then he'll carry on the talks. And that I just look at this and go... The fact that he's even having them conversations, and they spoke three times last week, he said. Mm-hmm. They spoke pre-press conference, which is why the conference was delayed. So they are knees deep in talks, and just the fact that they're talking gives me hope, mate.
Okay, fair enough. We'll see, won't we?
So that also, talking of Glasner, he won Premier League Manager of the Month in September.
He did, yes.
Needs not, a mention, didn't it?
Not really a surprise in some respects. They were fantastic in September, so well done to him.
Yeah, I mean, also, though, you compare it to, you know, the likes of Liverpool at the time, Arsenal, all the other, you know, Bournemouth. Like, there's lots of candidates there. I don't think it was too much a prerequisite that he was going to get that.
No, not at all, but fantastic for him.
Yeah, brilliant. Obviously, we talked about it earlier. Mateta's been called up to France and scored, yep. So that was brilliant. And I think the last bit of news from Palace, really, was that it's been confirmed... in the last couple of days that, I mean, there's no shocker here. I don't quite know why this is news, but Gay is definitely leaving. Glasner has confirmed.
Really?
It.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I know. It's mad, isn't it? It's just, I'll be so, do you know, it's a little bit like the Eze situation that, you know, the only news is about them. You can't find any other bit of Palace news apart from Gay leaving.
So what do you reckon, Andy? Do you think he's going to go in January? I know, because obviously theoretically, contractually wise, I think how it works is January time. He can talk now to teams outside of the league.
Well, he can sign a pre-contract.
So as long as he's outside of the league. So theoretically, I know there's Real Madrid have been sniffing around, let's say, Barcelona. There's a few. So do you think he will... I mean, I probably won't even hear about it, will you? But do you think they'll actually try and sell him in January so that he can try and get like a few quid for him? Or do you think they'll just leave it now until the end of the season?
Well, here's the situation, right? You've got an asset. And it's awful to talk about people like this, but he is an asset,
absolutely,
right? They paid money for him. It's depreciating in value. The last card that the club have got is to get the best price possible for a player. And what's the best situation you could possibly have there? A bidding war.
Well, yeah, fair
so
point.
So I do believe that the club will do their best to try and get something for him in January.
Mm.
And I think this is all interlinked with the Glasner situation, which is, well, what's the plan then?
Yeah.
And is it Diamande? Is it a few of the others that we were linked with that didn't quite come off because of this whole Europa League thing? I do believe if there's a decent plan in January and someone comes in, then he'll go out for a fee. But I don't for one second believe that we're not short of suitors.
No, I think the way that a lot of the European big wigs work, because it happened with Trent as well, is you've got a player like this, and Barcelona can't afford anybody, right? Yep. So if he wants to go to Barcelona, they will have chats with him and they'll say, stay to the end of the season and you're coming to us on a free. No problem at all. Here's a huge big bucket of money at that point.
Yep.
Because we can't afford to pay a club some money. Real Madrid have done very similar things, as I just said, with Trent. So I think if it's an international side, if it's a non-English team, I think you'll probably wait to the end of the season and go out on a free. If it's a league club, though, like you just said,
if Liverpool, Chelsea,
if those teams start having a few more injuries or they feel like they need someone and take an opportunity, you may see a cheeky 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 million quid offer come in January for him. And the club can't say no, really, to that, can they?
To be honest with you, no, I actually think it's going to be more than that.
It won't be more than that.
England international.
It's not about that. It's about what's left on the contract.
Oh, no, I know.
It's not going to be worth anything in that
Mate,
sense.
So. Supply and demand. It's how if there's more than one club that want him, they'll be willing to pay more than 10 million quid for him.
We'll see.
Because they know damn well that he'll end up at Real Madrid for nothing.
We'll see.
I just think it's not often, I guess what I'm trying to say is, not often do we end up in this situation in the football world.
Yeah.
And I don't think that there's too many rules of what's happened before to see how this is all going to play out. And I think you add Steve Parrish into that, who... But, you know, whilst he has his critics, doesn't often let people leave for free.
Mm.
So let's just see what happens.
But okay.
All I hope and pray is that there's some kind of plan.
Yeah, right.
There we go. Right, Neil, is there any news at Brighton?
Well, there's a couple of things I wanted to talk about just very quickly. So during the international break, I reckon Tony Bloom listened to Seagull Eagle.
I know he does, mate.
Yeah, I reckon he listened to my sweeping statement and thought, you know what? I think Neil's got a point. I probably need to come out and say something just to calm everyone down a little bit.
Yeah.
Just to show some words of comfort. So
basically he's sick of listening to you whinge. That's why he came out.
Maybe. Yeah. But you know, either way it worked, mate.
Yeah.
So he booked an interview and he's suddenly become out very sort of publicly. It was a really good interview actually. And I recommend anyone to go and have a listen to it. It's on YouTube and on the website, Brighton website as well. It's about 22 minutes. And he's talking about lots of different things. So it was a nice interview. And it was very measured, I would say. But I just thought the timing was quite interesting, you know. And it was a good interview about everything, a wide range of things. He talked about Hörsler and the first team, a little bit at the beginning and just sort of tried to calm everyone, I suppose, and say, yeah, look, you know, we expected this, a little bit inconsistency, a lot of young players, blah, blah. You know, that sort of talk about basically nothing to see here. We're not worried about anything. He spoke about other things, though, as well, which I thought was really good. There was long conversations around like loaning of our young players, our scouting, PSR, he touched on, his new investment in Hearts.
And then he's doing quite well, right?
They're top of the league, mate. Yeah. He talked a lot about the women's team as well and our search for a new stadium for the women's team as well. Or I say new stadium, a plot for our newly built new stadium. So, there was a lot in there. And it's a really interesting conversation, actually. So I recommend anyone to go and have a look. And it just felt like, as I said, he was just calming everyone down. Yeah. Uncle Tony having a few words.
So you feel calmer now?
No, not really.
Okay.
And the other thing I just wanted to pick up on, because I'm a bit of a nerd about football, I just really liked this story. It was really interesting. It's a few weeks old now, but I wanted to bring it up. Brighton are the first English club to use a new bit of technology, basically, a new bit of coaching technology. It's called Coach Whisperer.
Ooh.
Right? The concept is that during training, players wear a vest, essentially. A bit like, you know, the GPS vests that people wear with like heartbeat and stuff.
Yeah, they've been doing that for years.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So they wear like one of these vests, but with a slight difference. This one has a small pouch at the back, right between the shoulder blades, that has a little discreet speaker in it. And rather than screaming instructions across the pitch, the staff then can talk into a microphone, and the creators of the product say it cuts down any potential crossed wires and confusion as you're shouting across and stuff. So basically, Hörsler can like utilize an app, right, to pick out the squad members he wants to talk to at any one time. So he can, as the game is playing or anything is happening during training, he could, for instance, communicate with the whole back four and say, right, what I want you to do here is do this or do that. So I think it's really clever and really interesting.
Can't use it during the game, can I?
Well, so this was my next point, Andy. right? So it's something that's actually quite common in American football, in the NFL. So the quarterbacks have it and some of the other players. So when obviously everyone's screaming and you see obviously the quarterback with his helmet on and things like that, he has a similar sort of concept there where he's talking to the manager on the side, talking about what play are they going to do and things like that. Now, obviously at this precise moment, there's no rule to say that you can't and they can do it because
I didn't know that.
There was nothing ever suggested that that was even a thing. So at this precise moment, no, I'm sure they wouldn't allow it. But if this becomes the norm, I don't see any problem with it in some respects. But it's just an interesting concept that Brighton are, quite, again, forward thinking in their technology and they're buying this kit, this software, and they're doing this. And I just think it's a very interesting idea. The other thing that it has in it, which I think is quite interesting, is it has a translation. So if you want to, you can say stuff and it'll translate to whoever the player is in their own language. How clever is that?
And we know how accurate this is these days. So Hursler's going to be shouting, you know, back four, and someone's going to get, I want four pancakes for dinner, or whatever it would be. Yeah, I'm up for that if you want to use that.
Interesting though, isn't it?
Mate, it is really interesting.
Anyway, so that was all I was going to talk about. I just thought it was an interesting piece, a sideline around technology and football.
No, I like it. Forward thinking, outside the box, Neil.
Yeah, listen, before we move on, one other announcement, I think it's probably worth just saying that next week's episode, we're going to be back a little bit later, aren't we? We're going to be back after the League Cup games. So if you think about, normally we come out on a Monday or Tuesday with an episode and talk about the weekend's games. Because we've got quite a few games coming up over this next few weeks, we thought we're going to leave this episode next week a little bit later. So we'll probably be out on the Thursday night, Friday morning to react to this weekend's games, but also those League Cup games, the last 16. So just so in case you wonder and you worry where we are, don't worry, we'll be there. But
That, Neil, haven't we? We've had that where people are like, are you guys still alive? And
yes.
It's like, no, we are, but we just haven't done a pod on a Monday. no recording on a Monday. We'll be doing it on Thursday and hopefully out by Thursday night.
So speaking of those games, Andy, let's talk about the ones that we've got coming up. So,
well, they're thick and fast, mate.
They really
ridiculous.
Are thick and fast. So let's go through them chronologically for a minute, just very quickly. So first things first.
Yes.
Conference League, Europa Conference League. Palace this Thursday, the 23rd, have a game at home, I think.
Mate,
right?
I'm going to be there.
Yes, yeah. Okay, so at home against Larnaca, I believe. Is that
AEK
right?
Larnaca from Cyprus.
Talk to me. What do you think?
Mate, we're genuinely excited. It's going to be live on TNT Sports 3, I believe, for those people who are hunting for it. I thought I'd do a bit of community service and stop people from... you know, searching around
You've
for
done
the stream.
Service before, anyway.
That's completely wrong. I have not went to actual prison. No, I didn't. Don't know. I didn't.
Move on.
No criminal record here. Anyway, yes. No, we're really excited about this. Funny story, just very quickly talking about this game. Palace have I told you about this? Where they basically wouldn't let me buy my season ticket.
Yes.
And all that.
Yeah.
So me and Harry are now in the thick of it with the Homesdale fanatics over at the Homesdale end. We bought our tickets.
That's right, because your tickets originally were given to UEFA. Weren't they?
They're given to UEFA, but when I went to the game on Saturday, I turned to the right of me, and I still don't know the bloke's name, but I have a conversation every day, and I said to him, did your tickets get sold to UEFA? And he went, no, I bought them. And we turned to the left and went, did your tickets get sold? No, I bought mine. In front, did your? No.
So literally some UEFA bloke just really likes
just
your seats.
I'll have them too.
Brilliant.
Really, really strange situation, but anyway, we've moved over to the Homesdale.
Yeah.
And when I looked at Harry, was like, I want to sit over there because I want to be in the action. I was like, well, let's not go there. Let's just go just a few rows back so we're not in the action. And then when I sat there on Saturday and I was counting the seats up and I'm like, we're right in the middle of it.
Oh, wow.
it's going to be
an experience.
Mate, it's going to be fun. TIFO apparently and all this kind of stuff going on as well. So that'd be great. So
that's look, exciting for you.
Mate, it's great. He's really looking forward to it. So yeah, a bit of info on AEK Larnaca if you're interested.
Oh, always.
Yeah, all right. Formed in 1994. I think there was two clubs that kind of combined to create this club. They finished in the Cyprus Championship runners-up on 6 occasions.
Right.
Previously played in the Champions League, Neil. Big club. at the qualifying stage. And last season won the Cypriot Cup to qualify for the Europa League playoffs. They were beaten by Norwegian side Brann. You know, as in Brann Flamme. flakes. Nothing to do with that. They dropped into the Conference League because Brand did them over. And this, of course, would not be their first experience in this tournament because, as we all know, listeners, in 2022 and 2023, they reached the last 16. So I got a feeling this could be an interesting game. I think there's certainly going to be goals flying all over the place. I think 3-1. I've changed my prediction already. Palace, man, of course. Come on. 3-1 to Palace, the mighty Palace. The only thing I'm gutted about in this game is that it's not in Cyprus, because I would have loved that.
That would have been very nice.
I've got time to go there. But I would have loved it.
I reckon 3-0. I reckon you'll win 3-0. I can't see you, even conceding a goal against any of these farmers until the final. So, Saturday, Premier League matches, match day 9. Brighton have play on the Saturday. It's the 5:30 kickoff, the later kickoff on the day. And we are, as I said in the part one, at Old Trafford against Man United, who have just found a bit of form.
You're going to get walloped. Yeah.
Well, we've done all right recently, obviously, against Manchester United. So
this is the new Man U now, though, mate.
Well, yeah, last
Aaron
season.
Maguire's hit form.
Last season, we did the double on them. So at Old Trafford, we beat them 3-1. In the Amex, I think we beat them 2-1.
Mate, everyone's beaten Man U in the last couple of years.
Okay.
Come on.
Okay, look, let's say, since we've been in the Premier League then, how about that, against Manchester United, okay? So we have played them, I think, overall, since 2017, because we had a cup game as well, 19 times altogether, okay? Man United have won 10.
Okay.
Brighton have won 8, and there's been one draw, that's all.
Interesting. Yeah. And also, let's be honest, you do tend to win the games against the big clubs.
Yeah, look, I don't think we're scared of going to Old Trafford anymore like most teams.
No way.
It should be a fun and open game, I think, one way or the other.
Oh, I agree.
There will definitely be goals because Brighton can't keep a clean sheet. I don't know what's going to happen, obviously, because I don't know whether the game that's just happened against Newcastle is a rarity and a unique outlier, or it's going to be the way that we play moving forward.
Well, and also the same for Man U, right?
Yeah.
Have they now found their form?
Exactly. So we'll have to wait and see, but I'm hopeful that we come away with at least a point. That's what I would be hopeful with. And I'd be happy with a point at Old Trafford at the moment, I think, especially with their tails up after just beating Liverpool. You guys are... Oh, you play on the Sunday, don't you, obviously, because you played on the Thursday. You've got an easy game, haven't you? Where are you?
Mate, we're going to the Emirates, Arsenal. I'll be honest with you, it's probably a good job the next podcast is going to be later on in the week, because it's going to give me a bit of time to compose... Well, both of us to compose ourselves. We haven't got the easiest of runs coming up.
So you've got Arsenal at the Emirates. And you're going to give me a prediction? Are you going to give me a think as to what you think is going to happen?
Well, let's just put it into perspective. You talked about your form against Man United. Do you want to hear Palace's impressive form against Arsenal?
Absolutely.
We've won 3 times in our last 27 meetings against Arsenal.
But recent times...
Yeah, last
season,
time it was a 2-2 draw.
Yeah, I remember that Mateta long chip from outside the box.
Yeah, and I think this is going to be a real test. And I think there will... Look, we will... create chances.
Yes,
right?
I agree.
There is no doubt about that. There will be a lovely big XG number in it. The question is, can we put them in the back of the net? And also, are our defence going to go back to normal? Let's see. I'd love to say we can get something out of this. I would love to walk away with a point, because at some point, Palace will get the easier games coming up. We're still waiting for them. Then we can start picking up some serious points. But just keep up with the pack is all I'm after. Minimum of a point. My prediction... 1-1.
I mean, I actually don't think that's a bad prediction, mate. And do you know why? I think when you think about what everyone has in front of them at the moment, Arsenal are exactly the same as you. They've got European football as well.
Yeah.
So it's not like it's going to suddenly, you know, be a completely fresh team for Arsenal. Because I think Arsenal, who have they got? They've got Atletico Madrid, mate.
Yeah.
I appreciate it's on Tuesday, so they've got 2 extra days. But still, that's a lot. That's going to be a very...
They're going to chop them up. They're going to be injuries all over the place.
Yeah, maybe. We'll have to see. But okay, fair enough. I think you could get a draw, but I just think Arsenal will be too strong because they've got a bigger squad ultimately. And I think they can probably refresh their squad a bit better.
Look, the chances of us both having a smile on our face next Thursday, I think it's going to be slim.
Now that I think we can agree on.
Yeah.
And then...
It gets worse.
It gets really a lot worse for both of us. Wednesday, the Carabao Cup, the League Cup, last 16.
And that's why it gets worse, because it's an achievement to be in the last 16, right? Because you get through that, you're in the last 8. Good maths, Andy.
So the only... So the only thing I'm clinging on to is the fact that We have got, so let's just be clear for a second. So Brighton are away at Arsenal. So Andy, if you could kick a few players on Sunday, that'd be very helpful to us, please.
I'll be honest with you, there's more chance of us giving them more confidence.
Now, let them get some sending off or something like that. That'd be really helpful. Yeah. You guys are going away as well to, oh yeah, Anfield. We've got Arsenal. I'm expecting a change team for Arsenal, if you think about it. They've had the Champions League, then they've got Crystal Palace, then the next game again on the following Wednesday. That's a lot. They're going to have to at some point change their starting 11 and change and play a few reserves and things like that. So I'm hopeful that by the time we face them on the 29th in the League Cup, that they may be a little bit more of a disjointed side by that point. Do I think we can get anything out of the game? No, of course I don't, if I'm honest. I hope we do, and I'll be supporting them, but I just don't think it's going to happen. The main reason I think that is because Arsenal have just got a big enough squad to cope, maybe. But we'll have to wait and see.
But that could be their downfall, though, that they decide to use some of that bigger squad in Carabao Cup.
You never know, mate. We'll have to wait and see, obviously. But
they knocked us out of the cup last year, by the way.
Yeah, they did, didn't they? Yeah. I mean, Brighton and the League Cup just don't go together. It would be amazing if we do get through to the last eight, because I think, as I said to you a few weeks ago, the last time we got through to the last eight was something like the 1970s or something. So it just doesn't normally happen. Liverpool away, Andy, in the League Cup. So you would have had Larnaca on the Thursday, Arsenal on the Sunday, and then go to Liverpool on the Wednesday. How are you feeling?
It's horrible, isn't it? It's absolutely disgusting. But yeah, look, past three matches against Liverpool, Palace were unbeaten. So our past six matches, 1-2, drawn 2, lost 2.
So go on, predict.
2-2.
And then what? There's no replays. What's going to happen?
We win on penalties.
Oh, here he goes. I like your confidence.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that could happen. I think of all the teams between the two of us, I think Liverpool in the League Cup, I think they could play the kids. And I think you have a real good chance there. I think that's what will happen. I think they'll play the kids because they did in the last round a little bit.
Yeah, they did.
And I think that's what they'll do again here. And I think you will probably beat them.
But don't forget, though, they play the kids. The adults will be on the bench.
Yeah.
And I think that's the issue. And then the adults come on with fresh legs.
We'll see.
But look, I all I know is Glasner will want to win that cup. Right.
Yeah, exactly.
He'll go out. He'll go hell for leather with it.
And I think that's what Brighton will do as well. Fabian Hurst, I don't think he'll change the side too much either. No. I think they both want to win something this season. So, you know, we'll see. Okay, well, so we'll just have to wait and see then, won't we? It's going to be a lot of games to get through when we get back. But yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to the games, looking forward to seeing what happens. And this is why we're here.
Oh, mate, it's either going to be the most miserable podcast or the podcast of absolute disbelief.
So
where
true.
One of us is hitting the ceiling.
Or both,
so
mate.
Excited.
You never know.
I mean, that would be the odds, but let's see. Either way, mate, do you know what I mean? The chances. But anyway, I think that's it for another episode of Seagull Eagle. Thank you so much for listening.
Thank you, guys. Make sure to follow the show so you don't miss the next episode when it drops. And as I said, we'll be back next week, but a little later than usual, probably on Friday the 30th.
We've got some Conference League action, as Neil said, Palace versus Larnaca, Premier League action, Man U, Brighton, Arsenal Palace, and finally Carabao Cup action, Arsenal versus Brighton and Liverpool versus Palace. Ugh.
You can find us on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook and X, so just search Seagull Eagle and get the conversation started.
Also, if you want to, you could drop us an email, seagulleaglepodcast@gmail.com. You could also send us a fax.
Oh, really?
No, we haven't got a fax machine.
No, please don't. But until then, we'll see you next week. And don't forget, see you!